And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am Chip Patterson, joined by Tom Fornelli and Jerry Hinnon, and this is the Return of the Expert Picks podcast. Gentlemen, welcome back. Here we have reconvened. The slates are set at zero. Let's go with you first, Jerry. How are your thoughts going into this season, particularly as you've done pretty well here in against the spread? Are you feeling like this will be a year to repeat, or is this? Are you thinking it'll be a dicey year for you?
I'm thinking this is the year when I finally hit my goal of 60% picks. That's an extremely high goal. I feel like this is probably akin to me saying, this is the year I finally scale the Empire State Building with those little suction cup things that, you know, you can hold on to, even though I've never climbed even my own, like, side of my house with those. I've never seen those or used them, but I'm going to climb the Empire State Building with them, and I am going to hit 60% on my against the spread expert picks this season.
60% will normally get you at least a win. I think normally, like, average is like 56, even among like handicappers, right?
I think 57 is the percentage necessary to make money, if I'm remembering correctly. Or that's kind of what they're aiming for, I want to say. Maybe 53 is the break-even point.
Something like that.
Random. Yeah.
Tom, what are you thinking? You're going to get every one of them right starting this week, right?
Yeah. I mean, this year, to be perfectly honest, I am going to sacrifice my job performance just to make sure that I'm getting these picks right. Instead of writing stories or doing anything, I will be studying trends all year long.
There you go.
I won't even be watching games. I'm just going to be studying gambling trends so I could win the expert picks competition.
Because that's really what counts. But we are trying to provide you with some of the best, at least, if not necessarily winners, at least informative reasons why you should or should not take a team. We will also be introducing a confidence pool. If you are listening to this on Thursday, then you should be able to find the beginning of a year-long confidence pool competition between Tom, Jerry, and myself.
Except that it's not going to even be a competition, fools.
Suckers. And Tom will be curating that. And before we get out of here today, we will get a preview of some of those picks. But in general, the Expert Picks podcast will be some of the most highly contested games in top 25 action. We will also take requests from you if you want to shoot us those requests on Twitter. It's at Tom Fornelli, at Jerry Hinnon. I am at Chip_Patterson. You can ask us at any time during the week. We normally record this on Wednesday afternoon. We will gladly involve your picks as well. And gentlemen, let's get started right at the top with the defending champs. Florida State going to be playing Oklahoma State in Dallas or North Texas or Arlington, wherever you want to call it. We picked this game at 17.5. Everybody's taken Florida State. And so without getting too deep into where a particular angle might be for Oklahoma State, since none of us see it, and this includes the other experts, Dennis Dodd, Jeremy Fowler, John Solomon, Jerry Palm, we are across the board taking Florida State minus 17.5. So starting with you, Tom, where would you start to side the other way? How big would this number need to get for you to start thinking about the Cowboys?
Well, when we originally got the picks at 17.5, I went with Oklahoma State, but common sense got the better of me. I think Oklahoma State is going to be a pretty decent team this year, but I would, with less than 24 points, I just don't feel all that comfortable, simply because if you look at last year, Florida State not only dominated, you know, actual opponents on the field, but they dominated the spread too. They won their games by an average of 39.5 points, and they went 11-2-1 against the spread. So that just shows you how dominant this Seminoles team was last year. And a lot of the key players from that squad are back. They do lose some key plays on defense, but it's Florida State, and we've seen Jimbo Fisher's recruiting classes the last few years. You know there's talent backing up that talent. So I don't have nearly as many questions about the guys Florida State has to replace as what Oklahoma State is replacing. So I think there's a reason, and it's strange to see where every single person on CBS is picking the same team, but I think it's for a good reason.
Yeah, I think the NCAA record margin of victory in last season is probably still very fresh in everyone's mind. A lot of questions about Oklahoma State. How big would this number need to get for you, Jerry?
Not a whole lot larger. I think if you pushed it up to three TDs, maybe 20 points, 20 and a half, 21, at that point I probably wouldn't even think about taking the Cowboys. I would take the Cowboys, but 17 and a half is still just low enough. I thought about taking Oklahoma State here just because Florida State I don't think is going to quite be the spread covering machine they were last year, just because the natural inclination of 18 to 22 year olds is not to be as motivated as you were during your first season when you won the national championship. You've accomplished something. It's impossible not to rest on your laurels at least a little bit. So I think as a general trend this season, you have to pick a little bit against Florida State. But honestly, I expected this line to be in that three TDs, you know, between 21 and 24 point margin, because Oklahoma State has lost so much off of that team last year. You have to respect Mike Gundy's coaching, but they've had a lot of critical losses on defense. Particularly for me, Calvin Barnett on the defensive line is going to be a big loss against this Florida State offensive line, which for my money is the best offensive line in the country. Josue Matias is just such an absolute mauler in the run game. You know, Jameis Winston, I don't think he really is even going to need to throw the ball in this game, given the holes that are going to be opened up for Carlos Williams, for Dalvin Cook. I think the Seminoles are just going to run all over them, and it won't shock me if Oklahoma State, you know, kind of hangs around and maybe scores a late TD, you know, to push past just into that 17-point margin.
That's
going to
piss
cover
me off.
Yeah, yeah, it would. But I think you have to go with the Seminoles.
Moving on to a line that I absolutely hate. It is Alabama playing against West Virginia in Atlanta in the Georgia Dome. Alabama opened up in this exact game against Virginia Tech last year, came out, was a little frustrated, couldn't quite get the offense clicking early. They will not meet, in my opinion, a defense anywhere near the caliber of Virginia Tech in West Virginia.
Not quite.
Breaking. West Virginia
yeah,
has a great defense.
Don't go too far out on that limb there.
Yeah. I think that if, regardless of what happens at quarterback, and it sounds like Jeremy Fowler reporting that Blake Sims will start, Jacob Coker will also play, it does not matter as long as you're handing the ball off to some combination of T.J. Yeldon, Derrick Henry, and Kenyon Drake. But still, at 26.5, which is where we picked it, it's a scary, scary pick. I would have loved it more at 24, at 28, or 28.5. I would even maybe start considering the Mountaineers, but we are all three of us are on Alabama. You've got Jeremy Fowler and John Solomon taking the Mountaineers to cover at 26.5. Tom, what's your thought on where were you on this? And do you think that there's a shot that West Virginia either gets a backdoor, keeps this close early? How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, I'm in line with you. Because I don't like this spread at all, because I'm always a little trepidatious about Alabama with these over three touchdown spreads, unless it's against an FCS school. But it's I'm more comfortable picking against West Virginia than I am Alabama to not cover
yeah.
this game, I guess is the way you could look at it.
Yeah, I like that.
It's also, I mean, West Virginia under Holgorsen the last 3 years just hasn't been all that good against the spread. They're 14-22-1, and I feel like coming into this game with that porous run defense, the quarterback question to me is not really going to matter at Alabama, whether it's Sims or Coker in this game. They're going to be able to just run the ball all over the Mountaineers defense anyway. So I don't think that West Virginia offense is going to be spending enough time on the field to even to cover that spread. And that's what I'm hoping happens. But it's like the same thing with Jerry said with that Oklahoma State game. I would not be shocked at all if West Virginia gets a late score to cover the spread and tick everybody off.
Where's your head at, Jerry?
Well, here's two things. First of all, Alabama under Nick Saban has covered their last six season openers. They've tended to be very, very good in bowl games, the Sugar Bowl excepted from last January. When Nick Saban has time to prepare, I know if you look back at like LSU and his Michigan State days, as Tom documented on our site, what was that, 2 years ago?
2 years
now,
ago, Tom, yeah.
Okay. You know, the effect wasn't there, but at Alabama, there absolutely has been truth to the idea that Nick Saban is better when he prepares. Like I said, they've covered their last six season openers. Part of that, several of those games also factor in to Saban is, up until the Sugar Bowl in January, that game broke an 11-game against the spread winning streak against non-conference BCS competition. You look at those two trends, and I just don't see how you pick West Virginia. Like, maybe you say, you know, if Blake Sims comes out and has a terrible game and Jacob Coker's not really ready, the Alabama offense really sputters, you know, maybe you say West Virginia can keep it close enough to cover this. But I don't see how you can pick that. If you're going to make a pick, you've got to pick Alabama.
Yeah, it would be, it would really stink to lose for to lose this, like, what, 14 to like 31 or 14 to 35, like, especially if it was like 35 to 7 until the fourth quarter, till the last minute. But at the same time, you don't want to root for backdoor covers. Y'all taught me that lesson on the podcast before.
Put up a great record last year rooting for backdoor
covers. Yeah, rooting for backdoor covers. I'm done with that. That ship has sailed. I think I took a lot of favorites, including the big number ones. We'll get to that later. Wisconsin LSU, really fascinating game, I think, for mainly because you're looking at two teams that you would say could potentially be about the third or fourth best team in their respective conferences, but still there's a whole lot of questions. Wisconsin loses a ton on defense. They've got Terry McEvoy at quarterback. They need to figure out if there's going to be offense outside of just handing the ball off to Melvin Gordon and Corey Clement. And then for LSU, obviously, you got two quarterbacks. You've got Leonard Fournette, Terrence McGee, new running backs, Malachi Dupree on the outside, and some players lost on defense. I think that this is a game I would not actually be interested in putting money on, but I'm fascinated to watch because it'll tell us so much more about both of these teams moving forward the rest of the season. Jerry, we were all taking LSU. I'll pitch you the same question that we did for Florida State. Where does this number get that you start leaning towards Wisconsin?
Probably up over a touchdown. You give me 7.5 points with Gary Anderson, another guy who's very, very good in season openers, as you remember from the Auburn-Utah State game a couple of years ago. And you definitely have to start thinking about the Badgers. I was surprised to see a unanimous across-the-board pick for LSU in this game. Like, I really, really like LSU in it, but Wisconsin's a good team. I'm surprised that none of our seven experts decided to take the Badgers. But, you know, I think that's because the last time we saw the Badgers, the last two times we saw the Badgers, they looked like they weren't physically up for a game like this. South Carolina just, you know, kind of pushed them around a little bit in that bowl game last year, and you don't want to read too much into a bowl game. But that game wasn't really even competitive, which really surprised me. I was expecting the Badgers to win that game, in fact, and they just looked a little bit overmatched. And then the game before that, they lost as 24-point favorites at home to Penn State. You know, so I'm confused about Wisconsin. Like, I spent almost all of last season thinking this is the most underrated team in the country. And then they just absolutely did not look like it in those last two games of the year. Then, as you point out, they lose a lot on defense. There's some question marks about the quarterbacking. McEvoy, you know, if you're going to make yardage and put points on the board against an LSU defense, you've got to have balance. You've got to be able to throw the ball. And I'm not sure McEvoy is quite up to that kind of challenge against an LSU secondary, particularly this game being in Houston. You know, again, Les Miles, I think, has a generally good track record in these kinds of neutral site games. If you remember LSU, you know, they beat Oregon in this game a couple of years ago. I don't think they covered against TCU last year, but they dominated statistically. I think you have to like the Tigers here.
Yeah. Tom, what are you thinking?
I really don't think this game's going to be very close. I just think you look at Wisconsin, you mentioned they lost a lot on defense. They have three returning starters on defense. None of them are in the front seven. So LSU, yeah, it's replacing its quarterback, running back, and wide receiver, but it's got a ton of talent coming into both those positions. You mentioned Fournette, Dupree.
Fournette.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you don't call somebody Adrian Peterson.
Like, saying that LSU has to replace their starting running back is, like, completely irrelevant. Like, it's a good thing that they have to replace their starting
LSU
running back.
LSU has to upgrade at running back this year.
That's right.
Those poor bastards. But it's also, I mean, you look, they also have four of their five starters back on the offensive line versus Wisconsin defense that has seven new starters in the front seven and is starting a quarterback. In his very first game as a college football player, he's going to be facing an LSU defense at a neutral site. And I come back and I think, if you look at history, just in recent years, how many times have we seen any Power 5 school hang within 4.5 points of an SEC opponent at a neutral site to start the season?
Yeah. You know what I do like here would be the under. That the over-under set at 50, and this seems like
a game. I could see like a 34-10 game here.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, well, let's keep it cooking with the debut of JT Barrett as Ohio State begins the season on the road playing against Navy. We are all taking – we got to pick this at 12.5. This line has leapt back up probably to where it belongs, which is closer to like 16.
Right,
yeah. Yeah, that's 16-17 probably is about where it is. Obviously dropping right after the news of the Braxton Miller injury. You know, I think that this will – this is like one of those games where – I understand Keenan Reynolds, Navy's quarterback, is like one of the most like prolific. It's perfect for that offense. He's a fantastic rusher, like 1,500 yards last year, 31 touchdowns. But they are going up against a tremendous defensive line that even without Noah Spence suspended for the first two games should be able to cause enough disruption. And Ohio State, you know, they're going – Navy rocks that 3-4 kind of. So I don't know. I'm not thinking that JT Barrett will be too shaken up in this. We won't see a lot of the Braxton Miller highlight stuff, but I'm just kind of interested to see JT Barrett here, right? Is there any other like angle that you would take for this? Let's start with you, Tom.
No, I love Keenan Reynolds, and you know, Navy's a fun story, and especially, you know, I love the Army Navy game team of the year, but let's just be honest, Navy does not have the horses to compete with Ohio State for 60 minutes with or without Braxton Miller, with or without Noah Spence. Navy can't, you know, it's an option team, so Ohio State's just going to key on the run and force Keenan Reynolds to beat him with his arm. And even with the secondary problems that Ohio State had last year, I don't think the Navy wide receiver corps is going to provide a huge problem for the Buckeyes defense. So, I mean, I feel like we're stealing at 12.5 here.
Yeah. Jerry, you got anything on this one that you like?
No, it's just a matter of talent. You know, Ohio State's top to bottom talent makes this like what a 21-point spread, a 24-point spread. You know, yeah, you say you knock it down a little bit for the Miller situation. You knock it down for Navy, obviously being tough to prepare for and very well coached, and Keenan Reynolds. And I mean, they have all five starters, I think, back on Navy's offensive line, which is kind of crazy for a service academy. But the talent, you know, differential here is just so vast. And if there was one place where I think Navy would say they don't want to see some elite talent on the Ohio State side of things is on the defensive line, which just happens to be where Ohio State is the strongest. I'm with Tom. I think at 12.5, this is an astonishingly easy call.
All right. We've got a line that I absolutely hate, but I'm on the same side as Jerry, and it has to do with Auburn, so I'm going to turn right to him. We're picking Arkansas at Auburn. Auburn 21.5, the way that we picked it. Dennis Dodd, myself, and Jerry are all taking Arkansas to cover. I will tell you right now, I have zero confidence. It got no confidence points for me, but I went with Arkansas just thinking that, you know, with all this time to prepare, with all the Burt versus Gus sort of, you know, snip-snap that we've had in the last 2 years, if anything else, you know, the defensive line sort of seems to be mix and match for Auburn. Defensive tackles playing defensive ends and flip-flop, vice versa. And maybe Arkansas can slow the game down enough to be able to get within three touchdowns. What was your thinking behind an Arkansas pick?
My thinking was, well, first of all, I'm with you. I have very, very little confidence in this pick. If the spread was moved a point to 20.5, I would probably take Auburn. But getting that extra little hook on top of three touchdowns, I lean towards Arkansas just because this game, you know, it matters a lot to both head coaches because of all the little, as you say, snip snap, which is a great term, by the way.
Thanks, I just came up with that.
Yeah, Malzahn and Bielema the last couple of seasons. But that sort of thing matters more, I think, when you're the underdog. If you're, you know, Gus Malzahn and you're trying to, you know, really fire up the troops because of, you know, this kind of internecine SEC West philosophical warfare, I think it's a lot more effective when you're already the underdog and you're coming in off of this 0-8 season. Nobody's giving you any kind of respect. And I think that motivational aspect should be just enough to keep this, you know, again, within three touchdowns. We've already talked, you don't really want to root for a backdoor cover, but I could very easily see this being a tight game for the first two quarters. Auburn pulling away in the third as Nick Marshall comes in, starts to get hot, and then Arkansas maybe driving for a late, you know, screw you guys, we're not going to quit playing, score at the very end of the game. It, you know, Arkansas is just a much better team, I think, than they were last year. Brandon Allen is healthy. It's the second year of all their schemes. Trey Flowers is still around on the defensive end. I just think this is going to be a more competitive SEC kind of game than a 21.5 point spread would suggest.
And now to take the other side of the argument, Tom, what do you like about the Tigers here?
I'm pretty much just like you two as far as the confidence level in this pick, but I was looking at it more from the fact I think that Burt's going to be fine at Arkansas in the long run. I think, you know, they're going to improve a lot. It's just I don't know if it's going to be this year because I don't think he has the players in that he needs yet. And the ones that he does have in to go to his style of play are ready yet to, you know, hold up under a 60-minute game against an SEC opponent, particularly in the first week of the season. So I think, you know, you mentioned all the vitriol between Malzahn and Burt, but I think because of that, Gus is going to want to make a little point himself. So I don't think that Auburn's going to take their feet off the gas pedal if they get up. And also, it's Gus, you know, there's that certain faction of the Arkansas fan base that, you know, is kind of against Gus too, even though he's a god in that state. But I think I just think that Auburn's the better team. It's got more talent than Arkansas does right now. I just don't think Arkansas is ready to really compete. I expect them to win at least one conference game this year, but I don't know if it's going to be much more than that. And then finally, when I was just trying to, you know, I was going back and forth in my head, I was like, hey, you remember that Auburn was 12-2 against the spread last year?
Oh, yeah.
So let's go with that.
All right, I'm going to turn right back to you because I've got so many reasons why I should not pick UCLA in a noon game at Virginia, 9 a.m. their time, especially at 22.5. But I sided with the Bruins because I've just watched too much Virginia football, and I just don't – I can't bring myself in that very first slate of Saturday's games to be, like, watching that game thinking that Virginia is going to be able to hang there. I could see a slow start. What were you thinking? Tom and I picked the Bruins. Jerry Palm picked the Bruins, but Jerry and everywhere else is going with Virginia to cover this big number. Again, I know it's 9 a.m. for UCLA, and I know that UCLA has had a ton of hype. Virginia's in sort of this, you know, must-win sort of feeling for Mike London. What were you thinking? Do you have any good numbers to back this up? Because I've got nothing to support it other than I've watched too much Virginia football.
I mean, I have a lot of the same concerns about the trip across the country and the early start time, but I feel like if this was in the middle of the season, that would be a bigger problem to me. The opening game of the year, you've been preparing for this. You have time to get ready, you know, to adjust your quote unquote body clock. And I don't like giving up 22.5 points in a true road game. But like you mentioned, I mean, Virginia is the only team in the Coastal Division that we know what to expect from this year. The rest of that division is up for grabs, but we know that at the end, Virginia will be in last place. And I just don't think they have what it takes to hang with UCLA, especially because UCLA this season is competing for a playoff spot. That's the goal. They're thinking national title. They've got Brett Hundley, a Heisman candidate. They're thinking national title, and they're going to be prepared for this game. They're going to get over the time difference.
All right, Jerry, back up the Cavaliers.
That's interesting that just by sheer willpower, they're going to overcome the time difference. Your body, when it thinks it's 9 a.m., there's not a lot you can really do to just, you can't say, body, no, it's noon, let's go.
But see, classes haven't started yet, so UCLA players have been able to get up earlier to get ready to have their body adjusted, so that way when they make this trip, they're ready. It's science.
I don't know if I buy that. I also, what I do buy is that Virginia is the more desperate team here. They're at home. If you remember, they sort of eked out that crazy win against
the
BYU
team
to start the season at home last year, which is
another case.
There was
like flooding, though, wasn't there?
Well, yeah, but
BYU's locker room flooded. BYU's locker room did flood.
West Coast-ish team heading to, well, see, there you go. Weird things happen to West Coast teams when they come to Charlottesville, buddy.
That is what they all say. That is true.
You know, to me, again, like I just said, I think Virginia is the more desperate team. I think 22.5 is a number they can stay within. I'm not super confident about it, but I think UCLA is just a hair overrated, you know, being in like the top 10. Like Tom said, it's a lot of points to cover against what's still a somewhat talented team on the road with the time difference. I like the Cavs.
Yeah, I'm not too confident in my pick either. Just I couldn't allow myself to pick Virginia.
Yeah, that's all I got. Clemson and Georgia. We got to pick this game at 8.5 for the Dogs, and we are, let's see, I've got Clemson, Jerry Palm has Clemson, and Jeremy Fowler has Clemson. Jeremy Fowler's picking Clemson to pull the upset in Athens. He's calling his shot right there. Y'all all have the Dogs. Interesting, obviously, last year, this was sort of the big nightcap at the end of the first Saturday, and it was a great game. Clemson victory in Death Valley. Let's start with you, Tom. What were you thinking about, and where are you sort of seeing this game play out? At 8.5, are you thinking that this is like a 14-point Georgia win, or are you were thinking it's going to be more than a touchdown, maybe like a 10-point game or something
like that?
I'm
thinking 10. I just look at it, and I could see this game going either way, really, but I just feel like Clemson has so much more to replace than Georgia because, yes, Georgia loses Aaron Murray, but it still has Gurley, and it's got Malcolm Mitchell back, and it still has its receiving core, whereas Clemson pretty much lost everybody on that team last year that was a contributor on offense. And plus, the game's in Athens, which is why I'm rolling with Georgia. There's really no other numbers behind it other than that. I expect it to be a close game like last year's, but I just feel like 10 games or 10 points will be a close game in my mind. And that 8.5 spread was just a little too small. Had it been a 10-point spread, I'm probably going Clemson.
This is another game where I think with Clemson's defense and sort of the lack of knowing what to get from Hudson Mason, and even Georgia's wide receivers, I'm not totally sold on. This is one where I might look at that under. They've got it opened at 60. I would have absolutely taken under that, but now it's dropped all the way to 54.5. What do you like about the Bulldogs, Jerry?
I like that Mason has been in this system for absolutely forever, and Mike Bobo has shown he can develop quarterbacks. I don't think Malcolm Mitchell is actually going to play in this game because of the arthroscopic knee surgery he had a couple of weeks ago. Even so, they've got Chris Conley, they've got Michael Bennett, and as you point out, when you have Todd Gurley and Keith Marshall and Nick Chubb all in your backfield, you know, who needs a passing game anyway, really? And Clemson, for me, is just, I don't think they're going to be that great a team. I don't think they're top 15 caliber. When you're asking a team with Chad Morris as its offensive coordinator to suddenly sort of shift its philosophy and ask the defense to really lead the way forward and make the game-winning, game-changing plays down-to-down, week in, week out. You know, Clemson has some amazingly talented defenders. If you don't like Vic Beasley, you're a hater. You're a defensive hater. But, you know, I just don't see it working. Like, I don't see a team with Chad Morris that's been this sort of up-tempo, go-go, offensive-first team for the last several years suddenly being able to shift and win games with his defense and going to Athens for the opening game of the season. You know, we talked about Hudson Mason. Clemson's got, you know, equally sort of big question marks at quarterback with Taj Boyd leaving. I think the Dogs roll in this one. I think they win about 2 TDs.
Ah, all right. All right, let's now we're going to move into the Thursday night portion. If you are listening to this on Friday, then you can't call us out. It's already happened. Sorry. A&M in South Carolina will kick things off at 6 o'clock on Thursday. We are all taking South Carolina right now. This was another game that I think the the lines makers is for the first like SEC game on SEC Network and in this spot, especially with it being A&M and South Carolina, which has a trophy. This is a rivalry trophy game now.
This is one of the oldest rivalries in college football.
This is the Big Ten style game right here. But I think they got this number pretty close. I had a lot of trouble trying to pick this game. Not a lot of confidence. Jerry, where's your head at on this one? Again, you and I are both taking South Carolina, but it was a tough pick for me. Are you feeling more confident?
Maybe a little, but not a lot. I think what bugs me is I feel like Texas A&M is underrated. Like, you know, through the course of the offseason, I think this offense is going to be just about as good as it was with Johnny Manziel and Mike Evans, because the talent at receiver and running back and on the offensive line is as good as it ever was. You know, Ricky Seals-Jones, Trey Williams in the backfield, just all of these guys are so good. Cedric Ogbuehi, you know, is basically just, you know, the next lock for the top 10 of the NFL draft on the offensive line. And then Kevin Sumlin knows how to develop quarterbacks, you know, but none of that changes the fact that this is still the same Texas A&M defense we saw last year, and they are going to get demolished by South Carolina's offensive line. AJ Cann and those guys are going to have an absolute field day with A&M's front seven, especially now that Darian Claiborne has been suspended. Mike Davis, you know, whatever the over is on his rushing yards for this game, I would take it. Steve Spurrier said, I think last night on his radio show, that Mike Davis is full speed, nothing to worry about there. He is going to have a monster game. And, you know, it won't surprise me at all to see Texas A&M stay within 10.5 points, which is a pretty big number for two teams that are about equal in terms of talent. But just the matchup between that Gamecock offensive line and the A&M front seven is such a mismatch, especially with the game in Williams-Brice. I think that's the way you have to lean.
Yeah, South Carolina under Spurrier has been pretty good in these home openers, especially these Thursday night ones. Tom, what were you thinking here? Did you have any back and forth? Were you leaning Aggies at all?
No, I was actually pretty solid on South Carolina right from the start. For a lot of the reasons Jerry mentioned, mostly Texas A&M's defense more than the loss of Manziel. And it's also just some numbers. A&M was 4-9 against the spread last year, and that includes being 0-4 on the road and 2-6 against the SEC. So that pretty much made my decision easy for me.
All right. All right, Jerry, quickly.
Yes.
Tell me where your head's at going with Hawaii, the team that almost canceled football. I know they're at home, but going up against Washington, you were the only one of the CBSSports.com experts to take Hawaii plus 16.5.
I think when you have your best quarterback suspended, and so you're going with the guy who was third string last year, and he's making his first start, and it's on the road after that huge trip across the ocean. You know, we know teams tend to, you know, not play as well in Hawaii, and that's built into the spread. Like, in terms of the talent, in terms of performance last year, this ought to be, frankly, a much wider spread than this. But I just think Hawaii is not as – they weren't nearly as bad as their record last year. They had four losses by a touchdown or less, went into overtime a couple of times, really gave Fresno State and San Diego State some big, big scares down there. I think Norm Chow's just going to have them ready to play. I think they were better than their record. I think the quarterback situation for Washington is a big question mark. You know, this to me strikes me as one of those games, and I really wish like I had the hook here, like it was 17.5 instead of 16.5. But one of those games where Washington just kind of lets the rainbows hang around and just never really puts them away. And in the end, it's like a comfortable 14-point victory.
All right. I'm going to use that to transition because that was one of my confidence picks. And so we're going to turn to Tom, who will be curating the long con, the confidence pools weekly. What are we calling it?
We're calling it Confidence Pool Weekly, or at least that's what the bosses are calling it. I'm calling it the long con.
The long con. All right. That was one of my picks. What sort of stands out to you as sort of the games that will be big for the long con for this week?
A lot of which, if you look at the way we picked, there's a lot of crossover because, let's be real, a lot of the games this week are against FCS competitions and nobody's picking against a 49.5 point spread like they would make us. So I think, you know, Ohio State Navy is a huge game because we all seem to have a lot of points on that, except for you, Chip. You've only got 3 points hanging on Ohio State there. You're very confident in Navy, apparently. LSU and Wisconsin is getting some love from me and Jerry. 19 points on that game between the two of us. You, Chip, you're very big on Nebraska because you think that Bo Pelini has some sort of vendetta against FAU because of what they did to Carl. And I was hoping, can you explain that a little further?
And Carl with notes on the personnel. It's Charlie Partridge. I think I said in the explanation, in this spot, Nebraska, like playing at home against non-Power 5 competition, they've been, in the last couple of years, they've been winning by about like 24 to 35 points. And so with the other stuff, I don't know. I was on the same level. I liked that one. I liked Florida minus 36 against Idaho. I think that they'll keep all of the offensive starters in longer than they would otherwise in this game, just so that they can continue to break in that new scheme under Kurt Roper. I also thought that Marshall minus 24 against Miami of Ohio is just easy, because even though Marshall's defense has concerns, I think they're going to score 50 points against pretty much all the teams like this, and especially Miami of Ohio. So I can feel comfortable saying that Miami of Ohio won't get 20 points, even against Marshall. And then that Rice Notre Dame game was another one where I like Rice to cover 20.5 in that one. Didn't you picked Rice, right, Tom?
Yeah, I picked Rice to cover, but they're not in my confidence pool, which is another thing I've noticed too. You've got the 10 points on Nebraska FAU. I have 3 points on it. Jerry doesn't touch it. You've got 9 points on Marshall. I've got that as a 5. Jerry doesn't touch it. And then what really got me is the Florida, because you're so confident in Florida that you're putting 8 points on it, and neither me and Jerry wanted to touch that. And I know why, because it's like, no, 36 points with Florida? No, I'm not going near that. And then Rice, you've got 7 points on, and neither me and Jerry touch it in the confidence pool.
No.
You're confident in a lot of games that we're not confident about at all.
I am, let's see. Yeah.
So
sure.
Basically, you're going to start off the season probably, Chip, in either like a huge lead or in a huge hole.
You're going to be destroying us or done by the end of week one.
We should probably explain how this works before we get further.
Well, it's your typical confidence pick. We each pick 10 games, any 10 games we want. It doesn't have to be ranked games like we do with the expert picks. And we put a confidence point next to it. So if your 10-point game, if you get that correct, you get 10 points. If you get it incorrect, you get nothing. Although I was wondering, would we want to do it where – let's discuss this on the podcast of all places. But would we want to do it if you get your 10-pointer wrong, do we lose 10 points?
No.
That would make it
– no. Huh? This isn't Jeopardy.
All right. Oh, hey, you know, some people are smart enough to play Jeopardy, I guess, Jerry.
I'm telling you, the New Mexico covering 7.5 against UTEP is going to be the thing.
Yeah, I mean, you only put 2 points on that one, but I respected the decision to do it.
It was my explanation was, it's horrible, but they got their rapist back. Caruso Bombay, the running back, is actually pretty good.
alleged
rapist.
Alleged. Charges were dropped. Let's clarify this right now before we go any further.
That's an inappropriate way to say I liked their personnel better now than I did a couple months ago. Something
like
that.
You're just a huge Lobos fan. You always have been.
Always have been. Pretty good rushing attack. All right, let's see. Fornelli, you like the Washington against Hawaii.
Yeah, I have 8 points on it in the confidence pool. I mean, I just don't think Hawaii can hold up to Washington, whether Washington wants to be there or not. I just, even without Siler Miles, I just don't think Hawaii has the talent. And I do. They were in my bottom top, you know, they were in my bottom top 10 all last year. And I was always rooting for them to get out because, like Jerry said, they were so much better than their record indicated. But I don't think they're good enough to really compete with Washington if Washington shows up. And I feel like Chris Peterson's first game in charge, Chris Peterson's going to make sure his team shows up.
We had to pick some games that at most sports books would be considered off the board, but the way that we do it at CBSSports.com, because we have to pick it, a lot of times it's set at 49.5. And so respect Tom Fornelli for taking Michigan State minus 49.5 against Jacksonville State.
I don't think that's that. How many points is Jacksonville State going to score against Michigan State?
How many points is Michigan State going to score just in the 60. Course of a game?
All right. Here, would you like to know something, Tom? Fun fact?
Yes. I love facts that are fun.
I know. On Five Dimes, the spread is currently 32.5. So we're getting 17 free points.
We're getting screwed. I'm sending Darren an email right now. No,
also,
but I mean,
also South Dakota State is an FCS playoff team, and they hung within 39 of Nebraska last year.
Yeah, but
that spread is
29
and a half on Five Dimes.
But I mean,
which explains wait, Tom, you took Missouri?
Yes, I did.
Man, you have no respect for these FCS programs, man. No respect at all. No,
he also took Stanford minus 49 and a half.
Okay, shall I look that one up real quick too? Let's see. Stanford minus 35 at Five Dimes. So the rest of us
are
getting
14
free points.
I need to have a serious talk with Darren right now. I am sending Darren an email as soon as we are done recording this. I want my 40 points or whatever I'm giving away back.
I do think North Carolina will cover 45 and a half against Liberty, but that's just because
you're a North Carolina homer.
No, because what is it? Liberty lost to Old Dominion, a team that North Carolina beat 80-20 last year. So it was like Liberty.
That's pretty good reason.
Liberty.
There. I've got Liberty, but I'm sort of persuaded by that argument.
Liberty.
I just went with Liberty because I figure God is on their side.
That's Jerry Falwell.
Yes.
Yes. Any other games anywhere across the board that interests you?
I was surprised that all of us, all the CBS experts, took Louisiana Tech against Oklahoma, even with the spread that large. I figured somebody was going to go roll with the Sooners.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's 38 and a half points, but I feel like for all the preseason hype Oklahoma gets, nobody we work with is buying it.
Nah.
No.
I buy them as a Big 12 champion. I don't buy them as the number three team in the country.
Also, okay. I did pick one FCS team. It took Stephen F. Austin against Kansas State because we all know I'm a Kansas State hater this season.
Well, Bill Snyder isn't really the sort of coach that's going to go out of his way to run up the score on people other than Kansas.
No, and plus, didn't like Kansas State beat Eastern Kentucky 10-7 last year?
Was it last year or was it?
It was last year and 2 years ago. Last year they struggled against somebody too, if I remember correctly.
Oh, well, they lost to North Dakota State.
Yeah, there we go. They lost to North Carolina State.
Stephen F. Austin's not as good as North Dakota State, but they are much better than Eastern Kentucky. Stephen, that was one of, I think, if you're going to give us 49 and a half points on that, let's check out internet line says, not Arkansas State, control F, 37 points. So not as bad as some of the other ones.
What number would you take SMU? Actually, let's close on this one. Baylor plays against SMU on Sunday. It is the opening of McLean Stadium, and it is 32 and a half right now. And I'll say that I would still take Baylor
-41.
41.
Yeah, I would still take Baylor at 40.
I think 35 and a half I would take SMU. SMU is not that awful.
No,
they
I don't think
SMU's
awful at all.
Points on this Baylor defense. I think they're going to put up the over, though, is clearly, I think, what you really want to go with here. It was 73 last I checked.
Yeah, I don't think SMU is bad at all. I just think Baylor opening its new stadium is going to want to put on a show.
Yeah.
Oh, that's certainly true.
I think so. KD Cannon, freshman wide receiver, going to get out there and ball with Clay Fuller out. That's my guy to watch. I'll tell you that right now.
Is it KD or Katie?
It's Katie. It's actually the first. No, it's KD.
First female wide receiver in FBS history.
Yeah. Art Briles making he's their real
trailblazer.
They're real trailblazer. Progressive down in Waco.
Yeah.
All right. He is Tom Fornelli. You can follow him on Twitter.
Wrap it up. We're not topping that. Close the podcast down.
And you can follow Jerry Hinnon at Jerry Hinnon. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Watch all of the games, and you follow us on Twitter. We'll be talking about them. And next week, please, please, if you've got any questions regarding lines, we'll hit favorites, dogs, over-unders, anything like that, just hit us on Twitter. We'll save them. And then next Wednesday afternoon when we record it, we will be sure to bring them up. For Tom Fornelli and Jerry Hinnon, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.